Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing on with the purport of verse 3. We're right in the last stages. And we'll be referring to the yantra also occasionally. If you don't have a yantra, just look over the next person. We hope to get some shortly, some color ones for you all. Okay, so I'll just read the translation. I'll read the verses again for text 3. Karanikaram mahadyantram shatkonam vajra kilakam shadanga shat padistanam prakritya purushena cha premananda mahananda rasena vastitam hiyat jyoti rupena manuna kama bijena sangatam. The whirl of that transcendental lotus is the realm wherein dwells Krishna. It is a hexagonal figure, the abode of the indwelling, predominated and predominating aspect of the Absolute. Like a diamond, the central supporting figure of self-luminous Krishna stands as the transcendental source of all potencies. The holy name, consisting of 18 transcendental letters, is manifested in a hexagonal figure with sixfold divisions. So as we have mentioned, on the first day we mentioned, and we mentioned also yesterday, as far as I'm concerned, this is one of the most esoteric sections in any of our BBT books. So if you're having some difficulty following it all, then I don't think it's really so surprising. Anyway, we will try and clarify a little further today. So let us refer back to our yantra. Let us get it the right way up with, in the very central Sanskrit term, the dot is in the top right-hand corner. And then it spells kleem. So, how to understand this yantra? Well, it's like a meditational device. It's not simply a matter of having a picture. It's a combination of the picture with the mantras. And really, the mantras are what makes it what it is, or what make it transcendental, because the mantras are situated, or because the mantras are there to start off with, and then they're situated in certain ways in order to indicate different things. So as we discussed yesterday, this is the, as the verse itself says, this is the Mahayantra, the great yantra, depicting Goloka Vrindavan or Gokula Vrindavan. Bear in mind, they're not different. So you could say either Goloka Vrindavan or Gokula Vrindavan. Right in the middle, supporting everything, is Krishna, or Radha and Krishna, actually, the predominated and predominating aspects of the Absolute. So predominated is Radharani and predominating is Krishna. And we'll see in verse 4, in the purport of verse 4, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta makes it very clear that this kleem, Sanskrit term right in the very middle, is definitely none other than Radha and Krishna. The whirl, of course, which is in this hexagonal form with this famous mantra around the six sides, that whirl represents, that hexagon represents Krishna's, Radha and Krishna's personal abode, where they live, where they stay, where their homes are, like that. And that mantra, of course, is our, for those of us who are second initiated, the sixth of our seven Gayatri mantras, Klim Krishnaya Govindaya Gopi Jana Vallabhaya Swaha, and according to the more elaborate explanation of what the mantra means, or you could say the pastime it indicates, because Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that these mantras, they refer to pastimes, one pastime per mantra. And this, the pastime, so to speak, it's not exactly a pastime, I suppose, in the sense we might normally think of pastime. But the basic idea of what it is discussing is the full self-surrender of the devotee in Vrindavan at the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. And through surrendering in that way, entering, the devotee is able to enter into his or her eternal relationship with Krishna and actually enter into it and be there and, in other words, go back to Godhead. Through achieving love of God, through rendering devotional service, which would include meditating on the yantra while chanting the different mantras, which are in the different places, signifying different things or different places actually in Gokula Vrindavan. Through that meditation, one will enter into Gokula or Goloka Vrindavan. So just like we have on the wall these pictures, these are all Arisan style. They're kind of stylized. You know, they're not, I would say, highly realistic, really. Particularly, I've noticed the cows in the Arisan paintings look a little unusual. There's one right in the corner there. Is that a cow? The cows look rather funny to me in the Arisan pictures. But anyway, despite that, and despite them being stylized, we would certainly accept that they are real, meaning that Radha and Krishna are actually personally present there with their associates, with the cow, and the various other avatars, it seems, are in this big one on the side there. So they're actually there. This is transcendental reality. This is not just a picture, as in material life. Picture is just a representation, and the thing which is depicted in the picture is not there, but in these transcendental pictures, then the transcendental personalities and the realms depicted are there. Then there's the holy name, of course, just as people are vibrating sound vibration all the time, so the devotees are also vibrating sound vibration. So what is the difference? The difference is that this spiritual sound vibration to do with Krishna, like the Hare Krishna mantra particularly, that Krishna is actually there with all of his associates. And wherever Krishna is, Goloka Vrindavan is. So when you chant Hare Krishna, everyone say after me, Hare Krishna. Krishna was just dancing on your tongue with Radharani. The cowherd boys were there also, and all the cows. And the whole of Goloka Vrindavan was there present on your tongue momentarily. But of course, you know, the average person would think this is just some sound like so many other sounds, like all other sounds in the material world. But it's not the case. So similarly with these yantras, we understand that due to the mystical nature, there's a science as to how the diagram should actually be drawn. So if the science is followed properly, and if the mantras are situated, the appropriate mantras are situated in the appropriate positions, then we would accept that this is, that Goloka Vrindavan is here. And if one underwent this process being described here, if it was suitable for oneself, and we discussed yesterday that as far as we're aware, it probably isn't suitable really for us, but going back some time in the past, then surely this practice, this process was undertaken. So the people who did this, meditating on the yantra while chanting the mantras and fixing this all within the mind, in due course of time, they would perceive this as Goloka Vrindavan and enter this, and the transcendental reality is actually there. Therefore, the yantra is worshipable. And therefore, in some temples, like we mentioned, our Mayapur temple and Radhadesh in Belgium, they have yantras on the altar, and they are worshipped. And traditionally, certainly, there's a process of worship. Not in a symbolic sense, but in the sense of them being actual manifestations of transcendental reality. In this case of Goloka or Gokula Vrindavan. So, the devotee then would... We discussed how there are two stages. One is the preliminary stage of practice, where, as a sadhana, the devotee does this meditation, fixing the form of the yantra within the mind and chanting the mantras, whatever would be the relevant mantra. And gradually they would progress in that spiritual sadhana. And then on the swarasiki level, the perfect level of pure love of God, then that sadhana of meditating on that mantra, which means something, which depicts a particular scene, like, for example, we told you that Jiva Goswami and Krishna Sandarbha says that text 30 and text 31 in Brahma Samhita are mantras which can be used in this type of meditation. And of course we are chanting text 30 every morning, Vainam Kwanantam Aravinda Dalaya Taksham. Barhava tamsam asitam buddha sundarangam. Kandarpa koti kamaniya visheshi shobam. Govinda madi purusham tamaham bhajami. This is a suitable mantra for this type of meditation. And Lord Brahma here is worshipping Govinda in his beautiful form, playing the flute, beautiful eyes like lotus petals, head bedecked with peacock's feather, figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and his unique loveliness charming millions of cupids. So you can meditate on that. I don't know if you would meditate on it with exactly this yantra, but anyway, this is a suitable mantra for this type of meditation. And did everyone mark themselves present? Yeah? Okay. In this way, one would, on the perfect level, one would realize Krishna standing in front of you. In this case, we're chanting our sixth Gayatri mantra, Klim Krishna Govindaya Gopi Jana Vallabhaya Swaha, which embodies basically the concept of that full self-surrender, as we mentioned. So by that chanting, while meditating on the yantra, eventually one would come to that point. And the point in regard to this specific mantra, this Klim Krishnaya mantra, the specific realization that would come on the perfectional stage through that mantra, that is described at the top of page 9. The idea of the mantra, as we said, is the idea of full self-surrender and then entering into one's personal relationship with Krishna. So here Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, the meaning is that rasa is only the transcendental service of the central refuge, Sri Krishna, Klim, in other words, the central refuge in the middle of the yantra. As the predominating aspect of the Absolute, he's the predominating one, by one's ego as the spiritual maid of the predominated moiety of the Absolute Intega, which is, you know where we are? Top of page 9. Which is a very sophisticated way of saying that one would achieve a manjari position as a manjari of the predominated moiety. Yesterday we pointed out that moiety means half. The absolute intega, intega means one. So the absolute intega is Radha and Krishna. They're taken to be one. But the perfection of chanting this mantra while meditating on the yantra would be that one would enter one's eternal position as a manjari assisting Srimati Radharani. You follow the idea? So the pastime in Goloka or in Gokula, anyway, then he goes on basically to say that they're, just again to refer to the two stages, that during the stage of devotional progress, when you're working at it, not perfect yet, still trying to get it together, so then you meditate by chanting the mantra, but when you come to the stage of perfection, the pastimes manifest themselves, and you are there in it, as he says, as a manjari, or whatever your eternal relationship may be. And then you just get swept along in the very amazing transcendental flow of the pastimes in Goloka or Gokula Vrindavan, from one pastime to another, so many different situations, and you become part of the scene. You become one of the residents of Vrindavan. He, at the bottom of the purport, he expresses the same thing, basically. The meaning of the words Jyoti Rupena Manuna is that the transcendental meaning is expressed in the mantra. So the meaning is there in the mantra. Then, if you add love of Krishna and service to Krishna to the mantra, now you don't just add those things like you might add some salt to the sabji, but when love of Krishna is there and service to Krishna, then one is established in the eternal love of Krishna. In other words, one comes to the swarasiki state of entering one's own rasa. Now, do you think that's clear enough? Actually, we did say, didn't we, that we would take questions. And some of you, I think, had a few questions left over yesterday. So seeing we've just now finished mantra 3, text 3, perhaps if you have any questions so far, we could try and take them. Yeah. In fact, in Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada discusses this, that Krishna's pastimes, they go on in one universe after another. They were already here 5,000 years ago. Now they're elsewhere. And they're going. Yes. Well, what happens is, and Prabhupada, as I said, explains this in the Krishna book, is that if you become perfect in this lifetime, or thereabouts, yeah, if your eternal relationship is with Krishna and Vrindavan, and you become perfect, or close to perfect in this life, then you will take birth in wherever it is, whichever universe it is, where Krishna's pastimes are taking place at the time you die. And then you have one lifetime in Krishna's pastimes. And if you pass that, if you you know, come up to the standard, then you can go to Goloka Vrindavan. Yeah. Yeah, I was just joking actually when I said that if you want to enter the manifest pastimes, you'd have to wait till the next day of Brahma. Yeah, but this is the system as Prabhupada explains it. You become perfect, so you're essentially qualified to go back to Godhead. But before you're allowed to go to Goloka, then you go to a Gokula, in one of the universes, wherever it is Krishna's performing his pastimes. And, you know, it's described how the gopis, some of the gopis, when Krishna was here 5,000 years ago, they still had some material contamination. Although it wasn't a lot, but it was there. Something was there. So the description is that when Krishna first had his rasa dance at Vamsivat on the, what is it, the first full moon night of the Kartik season, which is coming up in a couple of days, then he played on his flute and all the gopis understood. So they all ran to join him. Some easily made it. Some had to struggle to get away from their families. And in a few cases, even though they struggled, they couldn't. So those who really had to struggle, the way it's explained is that they still had some contamination. Little bit. Not like us, but something was there. So in order to free them from that final trace of contamination, they had to undergo that intense experience of knowing that they should be with Krishna, but having to fight. And, you know, like really absorb their minds, how are we going to do this? And then finally they got away. So by accepting that transcendental anxiety of how to get to Krishna, how to get past my family members, then they got freed from the last little bit of contamination. Mataji? Understanding. The Lord Brahma who is speaking this Brahma Samhita is our Lord Brahma. The current Lord Brahma in this universe. That's according to my understanding. Yeah. Question is that when one receives second initiation, one gets these various Gayatri mantras and one is told not to tell anyone. So actually the rule is not exactly that we're not allowed to tell anyone. The rule, or not really rule, but the fact is that if anyone tries to chant any of them without receiving them in the proper way through a bona fide initiation, then they're wasting their time. They might as well not chant it. Yes, yes. So that is the rule, or that is the spiritual fact. Well, here Srila Bhaktisiddhanta has presented it. Shortly he's going to present the last of the Gayatri mantras. Srila Prabhupada and Chaitanya Charitamrita on a few occasions does the same thing. And various of our acharyas in their writings, even somebody, it was either Jiva Goswami, I think it was Jiva Goswami, wrote a whole book about Gayatri mantras. Yeah. So the rule or the idea is not exactly that we're not allowed to tell first or not initiated devotees. But the point is that if they may chant it if they want, but it will not help them. So therefore, best not to. In other words, you can't kind of sneak in there. If you know someone just got second initiation yesterday, sneak into their room, try and find the sheet with the mantras, and then think, oh, you know, now I got some special nectar. It won't work. So then he continues. Up until the time he was instructed by Saraswati, he didn't really know what was happening. You know, he climbed down the stem of the lotus and so on. Then he heard tapa and he went up, and then Saraswati instructed him. And then later Krishna came and gave him second mantra and further instruction. And then he carried on. Actually, what he did then is explained in the last verses. So when we get to the last verses, we will see what Lord Brahma did after all this had happened. Is that okay? What was Indradraja mentioned on page 8? That I do not know. I did try and look it up in Prabhupada's books. Maybe if you had a Puranic encyclopedia, it might explain who is Chandradwaja. But, and actually, just seeing you brought it up, someone asked yesterday about the statement that how Chandradwaja, or you can attain like Chandradwaja did, to the knowledge of the cognitive principle. Well, I think Hari Sori Prabhu expressed it quite nicely this morning. The cognitive principle, the knowledge which comes from the cognitive principle is the realization of your eternal relationship with Krishna. Yeah, it's the knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Or in this context specifically, because here it's talking about how Chandradwaja became perfect. So he actually realized his eternal relationship with Krishna. Yes, so, well, the question is that how, after all this, and meeting Krishna face to face and being instructed by him and seeing Goloka Vrindavan and so on, how did Lord Brahma get mixed up in the Brahma Vimohana Leela? So that is something that we don't really need to worry about so much, because it's something like what happened to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Yeah. You know, it's not that we should think that Lord Brahma, he really got bewildered, you know, like even worse perhaps than we are bewildered. I mean, at least we're accepting Krishna as God right now. But he basically forgot that. And he was, yeah, trying to give Krishna a hard time. And harassing the cowherd boys and calves. We wouldn't do that, would we? I don't think so. So you might think, well, just look at Lord Brahma. What's special about Lord Brahma? He got into Maya, you know, such sort of like a crazy type of Maya. He's no better than us. But it's not really like that. He's the head of our sampradaya. So we shouldn't take it, you know, in exactly those terms. Yeah. We should respect him as the head of our sampradaya. And basically the idea is that we should, you know, we should appreciate that if someone like Lord Brahma could, by whatever means it was, become that bewildered, and he's so big, I mean, spiritually he's very advanced, then what about us? So therefore we should be very careful. That's really the lesson that we should take from it. And we shouldn't get too much into this, you know, taking him as actually becoming fallen or, you know, practically atheistic, something like that. It's something like that. It's related to Leela, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, English-speaking people. See, the thing is that in those days, it was taken to be very sort of trendy or high class by certain category of people to read dictionaries, to learn English and read dictionaries and use big words. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is preaching to that sort of person. Yeah. In such a way they'll take it seriously. Yeah. Of course, at the same time, Srila Prabhupada made the point that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, his preaching was always very high. Prabhupada said many times he couldn't really follow, but still he stayed. And that was when he was preaching in Bengali. So, you know, we can also take it that he would actually speak like this when he was speaking English. There are conversations, recorded conversations of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, or at least transcriptions. I don't know if they're recordings. I mean, it'd be very nice to hear his voice. It'd be very interesting. But they're definitely transcriptions. In the transcriptions, he appears to use a somewhat simpler form of English. But at the very least, he had an extremely great command of the English language. Yeah. Okay. Maybe we can just go on to text 4. And maybe we can even go on to 5. Let's see how it goes. But at least text 4. So let us chant the Sanskrit responsively. Tat kinjalkam tadam shanam. Tat patrani shriyamapi. The world of that eternal realm Gokula is the hexagonal abode of Krishna. Its petals are the abodes of gopis, who are part and parcel of Krishna, to whom they are most lovingly devoted, and are similar in essence. The petals shine beautifully like so many walls. The extended leaves of that lotus are the garden-like dham, that is, the spiritual abode of Sri Radhika, the most beloved of Krishna. Just one interesting point here, and this is going back to the point I made right at the beginning of this class, is that this, we can take this to be a form of Goloka or Gokula. It is not just a picture. Because he is basically repeatedly referring to the world as being a hexagon. And that's how it is in the yantra. And it'll come out even more in verse 5. In other words, he is taking this yantra to be a reality. Yeah. He's not saying that, you know, we have drawn a drawing of Gokula and we have made it the world to look like a hexagon. He's saying that where Radha and Krishna live, that is hexagonally shaped. So that is how it is, of course, in the yantra. But it is not exactly that Goloka Vrindavan is necessarily in these types of shapes, meaning, you know, very finite geometric forms that we use in material mathematics. So here now we go out to the petals. And again, if we look at our yantra, the right way up, and those of you particularly who have the colored ones, the red, they are the petals. In other versions of the yantra, of course we understand that there are thousands of petals. Here we just have 8, I think. So there are different versions of the yantra, sometimes with many, many banks of petals. But here, if we look at it the right way up, we'll see in the top petal, that is Lalita's place. Then going around to our right, next is Vishaka's. Then on the right-hand side is Chitra Devi's. Then going around further to right, approaching the bottom, it's Indulekha's. Right at the very bottom is Champaklata's. Coming back up again on the left-hand side, who's this? Rangadevi. Then it's Tungavidya. On the left-hand side is Tungavidya. And coming up to the top on the left-hand side, it's Sue Davies. So according to this yantric depiction of Goloka or Gokula Vrindavan, the Astasakis, the 8 main friends of Radharani, they have their own special places where those petals are, and then the places like these extra petals in between, in the colored yantra, they're blue. In the one which is just black and white, you'll see it also says Kleem on it. Same as what is in the center. So those we could take to be the garden-like dham, or the spiritual abode of Radharani. Then, you know, as I said, there are other versions of the yantra which have more petals. Loads of petals, you know, one layer after another going out. In that case, some of the petals are taken to be the residences of people like Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda, and their relatives and friends and so on. Some of the petals or some of the leaves are taken to be the cow pastures. The lines around the edges of the petals or leaves, they are the paths. And as lotuses do, this lotus of Goloka or Gokul of Vrindavan, sometimes it's opened, sometimes it's closed, and it moves in between, partly open, partly closed like this. In this way, this abode of Radha and Krishna, Goloka Vrindavan, is very animated and very extraordinary transcendental place. Let's just have a look here. Oh well, there is also, at the end of the purport of text 4, it explains how Kleem is Radha and Krishna. Gopal Tapani says that Omkar signifies Gopal, who's Krishna, of course, and his potency, who is certainly Radharani. And the Gopal Tapani says that Kleem is the same as Omkar. Hence, the Kama Beej, which is Kleem, hence Kleem is Radha and Krishna. Kleem is Radha and Krishna, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a very, what you might call, rasika understanding of this word Kleem, this mantra, beach mantra Kleem. K, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, K means Krishna. L is Radharani. M is their embracing. And the dot over the M stands for their kiss. So Kleem then, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, can be taken to be Radha and Krishna embracing and kissing. Anyway, at least we can take it that this Kama Beej, this Kleem, this Kama Beej, is Radha and Krishna. I think we'll end here. And give text 5 more time in a few days when we get together again. Any other questions or comments? Propagating manifestations emanating from the chit potency, as mentioned in the middle of the purport of text 4. Now, that is described in the purport of text 5. Actually, who it is, it's Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. It's them. Yeah. 4 propagating manifestations. Propagating means that from them, particularly from Sankarshan, we were talking about Lord Balaram the other day. So Sankarshan is coming directly from Balaram. And this, the manifesting of the spiritual realm, all the Vaikuntha planets, that is all done through Sankarshan actually, and with the assistance of Vasudev, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. And we'll talk about that when we get to it, but that's the basic idea. This is in the middle of the purport of text 4. It refers to the propagating manifestations. Yeah. So they're on the edge. And if you can read Sanskrit or Hindi, you'll see that in our yantra, on the four sides, we have Pradyumna here at the top. Then on our right, it's Vasudev at the bottom, Aniruddha, and on our left, it's Sankarshan. So they're on the edge, on the four edges. But we'll get to that when we do text 5. And heard that. What he said was that we were talking earlier about how one may become perfect now, or at some point, and if one's eternal relationship is with Krishna and Vrindavan, then one would have to go to wherever, whichever universe Krishna's having his pastimes in at that time, and spend a lifetime there with Krishna in his leelas within this realm, in a Gokula. Now, the suggestion is that one has to take birth in an earthly, in a Gokula, even where there is no, where Krishna is not performing his pastimes. Now, I haven't heard that, so I don't know if I could comment on that specifically, but I could definitely say that in the Krishna books, Prabhupada very clearly says, as we just mentioned, how you have to go to wherever it is, maybe some distant universe somewhere, and Krishna is there, and you have to take birth and be with Krishna in Gokula, and then if you get through that successfully, then you can go to Goloka. That's what Prabhupada said. Now, I don't know if you have a reference. Do you have a reference for that? I haven't come across it personally. Brihad Bhagavatamrita. We could possibly have a look-see. Yeah. But I don't offhand recall having seen it, although perhaps it's there. These people who are living here in Vrindavan, and the animals and the trees and all the living entities, they're very, very special. And basically, they're on their way back to Godhead. Basically, they're on their way back to Godhead. We all know, I mean, we've definitely heard that the residents, all the living entities here in this Vrindavan, as we see it today, they're all very special people who are, I mean, special living entities who are on their way back to Godhead. So the suggestion mentioned here by Brihat Mridanga Prabhu is that after becoming, you know, perfect or more or less, then one might possibly take birth in this type of situation, then go to a Gokula where Krishna is actually having his pastimes, then Goloka Vrindavan. Now, to tell you the truth, as I say, I haven't seen it in exactly those terms, but it's definitely a fact that Prabhupada mentions about how special the living entities are here. Yeah. And there's one bumblebee sort of right in the back there, I think he's still there, buzzing around, a big bumblebee. And I was just thinking, maybe he's one of the, what are they meant to be like, sapphires or something like that, I forget.